Time, der Golf-Podcast. Mit Jens Zielinski, Florian Fritsch und Bernd Ritthammer.
Hallihallo, liebe Tee Time-Hörer, willkommen zu einer weiteren Summer-Special-Folge. Wo ich gerade bin, ganz einfach, ich bin gerade auf dem Wittelsbacher Golfclub auf der Range. Wir haben im Moment, an dem Tag, an dem ich aufnehme, Juli bei der German Challenge. Das ist aber für unsere heutige Folge völlig irrelevant. Wir haben eine Summer-Special-Folge und da haben wir uns ja auf ein Interviewformat verständigt intern. Und ich habe heute einen ziemlich spannenden Gast. Die aufmerksamen Tee Time-Hörer werden ihn schon kennen. Das ist der René Smörnberg. Der war bei mir schon mal Caddy und ist seit vielen, vielen Jahren Caddy aus Holland. Und heute soll es einfach mal ein bisschen einen kleinen Deep Dive geben in das Thema Caddy sein auf der ganzen Welt in Europa. Wie empfindet er es? Wie macht er es finanziell? Und deswegen muss ich jetzt leider auf Englisch switchen, auch wenn sein Deutsch gar nicht so schlecht ist. Aber wir switchen auf Englisch, das macht es für uns beide leichter. Welcome, René. Thanks for taking time to talk to me.
Hello, Ben. No worries.
So, René, a couple of facts, first of all. How long have you been caddying?
This is my 15th season.
15th season. Do you remember how many players you worked for?
Well, I had you back and forward about 12 times already. True. So, honestly, I have no idea. There are so many.
Yeah.
I couldn't even count them at the moment.
Yeah.
So I would say it's like somewhere between 1,500.
1,500 caddy, 1,500 players.
1,500, so.
So between 15 and 100 players, yeah. That actually makes sense. Probably closer to 100.
Yeah, sometimes I did two on a day even, so.
Two on a day, so.
Missed the cut with both of them, so.
So morning good. Round and afternoon round?
Yeah.
Nice.
Missed
nice,
the cut
nice,
both. Nice. Once with with Max Kramer was in La Comera. So I worked for, I think, Damien Ulrich, missed the cut, and then I did Max Kramer in the afternoon.
Yeah,
missed the cut as well.
It's probably a lot of people don't know that this is an option. I mean, it's probably only an option on like this level, probably here on Hotel Planet Tour or Challenge Tour level. I think on DP World Tour level, maybe also the players wouldn't want that.
No, DP World Tour sometimes happens, but it's more when a caddy gets sick or injured, or somebody needs to stand in.
So you jump in. So for example, your player plays Thursday afternoon, Friday morning, and he just doesn't play well, misses the cut, and then there's someone in the afternoon here, and there's no mandatory caddy on the challenge tour. So that means that you can maybe fill in for him if he doesn't bring a caddy, and he says, listen, I'm playing well, I think I'll make the weekend, you need a job on the weekend, and then obviously you're going to say yes.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'd done it once for you. It was either on the Friday or Saturday because you were a bit sick.
Yeah.
And then you asked me, I don't know where it was. So. Yeah.
And a friend of yours, Barry, also, Barry stepped in for me once on the weekend. So it does happen here because then again, I mean, and this is something that we're going to talk about later, the financial part of everything. I mean, player-wise, it's already difficult. We talked a lot in our podcast about that this job is a bit of a risk and reward thing and that it's a bit of a lottery as well. So sometimes you get lucky, and the players that we see on TV, most of them got lucky and are just really, really good and make a lot of money. But the reality, if we look around here this week in Wittelsbacher, is quite different. And I mean, even more so on the caddying side. So 15 years as a caddy, how did you get into it in the first place?
Actually, the guy I'm working for now, Wouter de Vries, I started with him a bit when he was an amateur, when I was still having my previous job. And I wanted to do something different, and I always liked top sports, basically. I don't like amateur sports, but like work with like the best people in sport. But yeah, you cannot just become a football trainer. But to be honest, everybody could become a caddy. If you know a little bit about golf and maybe you do some club caddying or you play on a good level yourself, which is not the case with me, but...
That's nice of you to say that. I've seen you play golf and it's actually true. Yeah, you don't play on a top level.
But it's a little bit better now because I think I found something in my swing.
So. You found something.
Yeah, yeah. But actually, everybody who wants to caddy, who knows something about golf, has a bit of a feeling for sport, you know, what you should basically do is I think you should go caddy for like the top amateurs in your country because they would like to have somebody, they would like it. And then you can just come out to the challenge tour and find somebody. You always find the victim, so.
Yes, there's always a victim waiting for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you look around in your, like, the people, I mean, you know, a lot of other colleagues, a lot of caddies that you talk to and that you know over the years, how would you say, so you got into golf, I remember, I mean, you can say it yourself, before you worked in, like, in the football cosmos, like you worked in arenas in Holland.
Yeah.
And you had a couple of food stands, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, in Johan Cruyff Stadium in Amsterdam, yeah.
So obviously, so you were like someone who just came across it. Like, what would you say most of the caddies that you know, how did they get into the caddying thing? Were they good golfers themselves, or was it more like a, maybe I should, or were they club caddies? I mean, a lot of the English guys probably were. It's like, what is your view on that?
Well, actually, the older generations, they were basically all club caddies in general, and they're not very good golfers themselves. Some of them don't golf at all and never did. But then the new generation in general, they are either good amateurs or ex-professional golfers who quit playing golf and have friends who are playing on professional level, and that's how they started caddying. So they are basically good golfers.
So one thing that you you became quite famous for being one of the few caddies that has ever have ever worked on LIV Golf.
Extremely famous.
There's not that many caddies so far that worked on LIV Golf.
No,
to be honest, because there's
only
not many players.
54 a week, and
exactly.
It used to be 48. So
you got into, what was it? Was it
2022? So the first season on LIV. So I started working for Siwon Kim. So he basically got on LIV because he won an event on Asian Tour called International Series, which is basically financed by the PIF, who also financed LIV Tour. That's how he got on LIV. And then he needed a caddy, and he probably ran out of options, so he had to call me.
So you were his last
in.
Option?
Yeah.
So he said he had like a full list in his phone, and
yeah,
he said,
they all said no.
Was it two seasons that you worked there? Or
yeah, but the first season was 8 events. So I only did 5 events the first season. So the first season, my player kept his card. He needed to finish top 24. So he kept his card. And then the second season, the season is only 14 events. We did 14 events. But my player, he struggled big time.
Yeah. How did you experience this whole tour? I mean, we obviously know the financial side and how much money is involved, but like, how did you see it from a caddy perspective? We did talk about it in the past, but talk us through again, like, how in comparison to, I mean, you mainly worked on the DP World Tour, or like the European Tour group, like, what is the difference in the way the event is run and like how you guys are treated?
Well, it's quite a bit difference because of course they pay for your flights, they pay for your hotel room, they even pay for your food and your beer in the evening, so you can leave your wallet at home. They pay for everything. You get at the airport and there is a car waiting for you who brings you to the golf course or the hotel, so it is great. But besides that, the people who run LIV Tour, they like it was a bit of a family because everybody was against LIV. So then, of course, you melt together. But the people are really nice, and also for caddies. So the caddies get the same treatment as the players. You know, you eat the same food and you basically always together. We get our own physios and stuff like that. So it is pretty nice as well. You've been treating as a human, and on the European Tour sometimes. It's getting better and better. It's a bit different.
Yeah. I mean, as you said, I think there's good events and not so good events in the European-based tours. It is getting better. I've also seen that, but yeah, they're still, I mean, you saying there's physios for caddies, I mean, I think the European Tour is pretty far away from offering that service financially as well, probably. But yeah, there is a big difference, and sometimes you feel like, the way you, like, where you eat and what you get to eat is not always as it should be.
No, but European Tour, I have to say, at the moment is good. We get treated good, so it's much better. But the PGA Tour has never been very good as well.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So the PGA Tour, the caddies, since a couple of years ago, were not allowed to get in the locker rooms, not allowed to get in the clubhouse. So I don't know what they did on Sunday after the round, if they had to jump in the water and shower there. And then, because I've done the Memorial twice, that is Jack Nicklaus tournament, and the caddies were not treated very well over there. They just put you in some kind of a little shed where they throw you some food, and that's it.
Oh, wow. let's talk about a couple of numbers. How, I mean, on the other tours, the normal breakdown or normal split that you get is like you get normally you get 7% prize money if the player makes the cut and 10% if he wins. Is that the way the Lyft guys do it with their caddies?
Yeah, Lyft Tour is the same, and then you get your weekly wage, which you, of course, depends on the player you work for. I mean, the guys who work for top players, they get like a yearly money.
Yeah.
So
like they've got a proper fixed salary.
Contract, fixed salary, but some of them get a fixed salary, they don't get a percentage. That's like, I think like Tiger's caddy, latest caddy got like maybe $500,000 or even more. And then all his costs paid for, obviously, but I don't think he get a percentage.
No cut, yeah.
Which is not too bad if your boss is only doing 6 tournaments a year, so.
that's all right, yeah.
And on Lyft 2, you had like, because you have the teams there, so it basically the teams are paying for all your costs now. The first year, the Saudis were paying for all the costs, and as from the second year, it's the team who's paying for the costs. And the teams had different deals. So some teams, they pay the caddies $5,000 a week, and they need to pay all the costs from it themselves.
Yeah.
Well, I spent on average on European tour maybe $800 a week on my costs. So
yeah.
Lyft is going to be a bit more expensive. But you could clear easily $3,000 out of that, which is a great deal.
Nice,
but still,
yeah.
Some caddies are complaining.
Yeah, of course,
because the top caddies, they used to fly business class, and you cannot fly business class.
If you have that money.
Yeah, if you have to go to Australia or whatever. Where.
So during your... What is it then, like 18, 19 events that you did?
Yeah, 19 events.
19 events. Like, how much money did you make roundabout?
So we had one good result where my player finished third. So he picked up like over 1.2 million. So I get my 7%. Mm. Well, most Germans are good in math, so they figure out how much
like
it is.
Like 3.50 euros, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah.
And then the last prize at the time was $122,000. And we finished basically last the whole second season.
Oh no.
Because my player couldn't get it off the tee, not even within 7 iron in his hand
point. Yeah, yeah.
But still, if you finish last, so you get your 7%, you always get $8,000 and you wait. So you always make like $9,000 having no cost. So I was quite disappointed we only did 14 events. I would have.
You wanted to work every week.
40 or 52, ideally.
Let's do 40 or 50 weeks. Talking about that already, are you involved or do you have any idea about the future of Lyft? Any sources?
Well, just a lot of rumors because, of course, a few colleagues on Lyft, sometimes you ask questions. But it's the same when I was working there. There's always rumors. And Lyft is not very clear in communicating. And they're changing the rules all the time as well, even towards their own players. But how it looks like now is, so they're not cutting any major spots, no world ranking points. So they're a bit on a dead end, I would say, because I think like 40% of the players are above 40 as well. So you're not going to get young top players to play for Lyft. So something needs to change. Would it be sustainable? Otherwise, I would think it's gone in 5 years from now. So I would think like, they might need to buy over the European Tour and they make a promotion relocation thing. And then they might get world ranking points, et cetera, et cetera. Because basically all power of golf is basically settled in Augusta. Those are the people who make the rules. And they said when Lyft came up, we're going to smoke them out basically to save the PGA Tour. Because if Lyft would have had the world ranking points, the PGA Tour would have been, all the top players would have been on Lyft, even Rory.
It's going to stay interesting because, I mean, also like with you saying that Lyft is not very clear in communicating because maybe they don't even know themselves. And the same with the other tours, I mean, PGA Tour, DP World Tour, I mean, how many big news came out over the last 2-3 years that no one knew about a day before? Like with this, what was the last big thing was that merger, whatever that means, nothing apparently, between Lyft and PGA and like no one had a clue a day before.
No, because basically what the PGA Tour wants, they want to stay in control. They want to take the PIF's money and stay in control. Well, that doesn't work like that, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, the PGA Tour has been complaining, of course, and crying. But basically what the PGA Tour have been doing for 30 years, that's what Lyft did to them. Because the PGA Tour is taking everybody's best players all the time.
And PGA Tour is doing that to DP World Tour right now.
Yeah, so, and the DP World Tour is doing it to the Sunshine Tour, and the Challenge Tour is doing it to the Pro Golf Tour, and that's just how things work.
Und nun, macht euch bereit für die neue Rubrik mit dem Titel
Wochenquickie.
Dass du mal wieder in diese Richtung denkst, ist ja klar. Es sind kurz.
Du musst doch nicht immer gleich an das eine denken. Das war gar nicht so gemeint. Wir können auch Quickie der Woche machen. Wir wollen ja die Leute zur Clubmeisterschaft ready machen. Race zur Clubmeisterschaft, Road zur Clubmeisterschaft, das ist die Straße zum größten Vereins-Championship.
Genau, die Straße zur Vereinsmeisterschaft.
Das lassen wir mal so stehen, würde ich sagen.
Jetzt ist es wirklich nicht mehr weit bis zum Turnier der Turniere, dem großen Saisonhöhepunkt aller Golfer in der Dachregion, in Deutschland vor allem, der Clubmeisterschaft. Nur noch ein paar Wochen in den meisten Golfclubs und dann geht's um die Wurst. Wir haben das ganze Jahr damit verbracht, euch golfspezifisch, fitnesstechnisch, strategisch auf das absolut höchste Niveau zu heben mit unseren Tipps. Aber jetzt kommen die Sachen, die vielleicht noch viel mehr Auswirkungen auf eure Endplatzierung haben und hoffentlich auf den bevorstehenden Sieg bei eurer Clubmeisterschaft als all das andere, nämlich dem Bullshit-Talk.
What kind of bullshit is this?
Ihr kennt's alle von den anderen. Was wird da teilweise für ein Müll und für einen Rotz auf der Runde erzählt? Und Entschuldigungen. Und gleich am ersten Abschlag, wenn der in die Hose geht, wird sich an die Schulter gefasst und sich gesagt, ah ja, ich habe da eine Verletzung und ich kann mich kaum bewegen. Ich probiere es aber trotzdem, weil ich trotzdem so ein geiler Typ bin. Ja, das ist quasi Bullshit-Talk. Also macht euch das selber zunutze. Ja, wir wollen jeden Vorteil nutzen, den wir kriegen können. Labert eure Mitspieler voll bis zum geht nicht mehr. Vielleicht nicht direkt den Rückschwung labern, aber sofort danach. Kommentiert alles und jeden, der nicht bei drei auf dem Baum ist. Hebt euer eigenes Spiel in die Lüfte. Habt Entschuldigungen parat, ohne Ende. Verletzungen, Stress zu Hause, Stress in der Firma, Autopanne auf dem Weg hierher. Ich habe nur noch einen Golfball. Morgen bin ich pleite, wenn ich heute nicht gut spiele. Also jede Entschuldigung, die euch einfällt, um von eurem eigentlich schlechten Spiel abzulenken, ist hier willkommen. Bereitet euch vor, habt ein komplettes Buch parat, das ihr einfach nutzen könnt, um den ganzen Shit, den ihr euren Mitspielern erzählen wird, auch wirklich aufzudrängen. Lasst krachen, es gibt keine Tabus. Einfach labern, labern und noch ein bisschen mehr labern. Und dann haben die anderen vielleicht einfach keinen Bock mehr und lassen euch gewinnen.
Okay, René, let's get a bit more into money in general in terms of making a living as a caddy, which we both know is a bit difficult. There's not many caddies in the world that have a very comfortable life financially. Obviously, Liv, since Liv is here, there's more. And with prize monies going up everywhere, that also means there's more money for caddies in general. I mean, even on DP World Tour right now, We both know that the future of the DP World Tour doesn't look very good at the moment, but still they're playing for more and more money every year at the moment. Whoever pays for it, it doesn't matter right now. So there is more money coming down, but in the end, it is a difficult life. And it obviously, like, how do you handle it? I mean, we know, like, I wonder how people handle it that have financial obligations back home in terms of they have a family, they have kids, and I find that very difficult. But like, how do you go about it with the financial security and everything?
You're saying that I never understand how some of my colleagues doing it from the UK who have like two kids, they must have a wife who has a decent job as well or something, because otherwise it's impossible. In my case, I have no kids. I have no girlfriend or wife. I'm 48 and I'm when I'm in the Netherlands.
No kids that you know of.
No kids that I know of. I'm pretty sure I don't have kids. But yeah, when I'm in the Netherlands, I just stay at my parents' place. But I hardly any there. So,
where do you spend your time? Like in between tournaments? Like I know you've been to South Africa quite a bit in the past.
Yeah, last few years mostly in Thailand because I worked on Asian Tour a bit. And when I was on leave, they just fly you to everywhere you want. So I just went either to Thailand or South Africa, and they pay for your flight, so that helps. But I'm not staying that much in South Africa anymore in Cape Town because Cape Town got really expensive at the moment. So I just prefer then to go to Thailand. But now if I have 2 weeks off, obviously working in Europe, I just go to my parents' place and they're on holiday. If they weren't on holiday, I would have maybe gone to Spain or something.
I mean, I think it's very difficult for the average German person with the normal job being employed. I mean, this sounds almost like, on the one hand, the financial insecurity is obviously only for some people. I think not a lot of people could cope with it. On the other hand, it also sounds like a great life. The freedom that you enjoy in between tournaments is phenomenal at the same time.
Yeah, it's a bit addictive because in 15 years, I thought many times, especially in the beginning, I need to do a different job because I wasn't making any money and you can't keep on doing that. But yeah, because you have the freedom and you travel all over the world and you have fun with your colleagues and also with the players and stuff. And you never know if you get a good player and catch a break and then you do well, because it's not only the money, it's also, that's what you know as well, it's also fun to work for the player who's on the leaderboard. But it's just way more fun than when you're not on the leaderboard. And I think that counts for the player as well.
Yeah, it does normally, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not just the money, obviously, which is the most important thing, because that's why you're working for and that's why a player is playing for, because a player is running a business and he needs to make money as well.
So right now you work for Wouter, a Dutch guy who is basically re-retired. So he used to play and then he didn't play for a long time and now he's back on it. And how old is Wouter?
He's 38 already.
38. Oh, it's yeah. the same as me.
Yeah.
So he's so super young. So he's 38.
Still very young.
Still
yeah.
very young.
Still in the beginning of his life. So
big future ahead of him.
Yeah.
So Wouter, we both know, a great player in general, a huge talent, hits the ball a mile. So opportunity. Do you, like, how do you see Wouter's game right now? And how do you go about, like, let's say, if you decide to stop with a player, or if the player decides, now this is, it's not working, or I can't afford it anymore. Like, how do you go about finding someone new or finding someone promising? So first of all, how is Wouter doing and what do you see with him?
So Wouter has been coaching for 12 years, and a year and a half ago he started to playing professional golf. But Wouter is quite good in getting sponsors. So he has like 25 sponsors. So, and they all paying good money. So that's why he can financially do it. His long game is really, he's like really talented. He's like the best player out of the trees. He always finds the hole and he pulls it off. Like yesterday, we didn't play very good off the tee. And some of the shots hit were like incredible. I don't know anybody who could basically do that. Maybe Tiger, but that's about it. But his long game in general is pretty good at the moment. He's been struggling big time on the greens. Chipping wasn't good. Pitching and wedging not good, but that's because he hasn't practiced on it at all. So we started practicing on it now, and actually his pitching, chipping and wedging improved already big time in like a few days. And I remember you had the same couple of years ago when we were at Valderrama, you were struggling a bit with it. And then with either the right information or the right practice, you can actually improve a lot in short
period. It can go quickly.
Yeah.
Very quickly. If you find, especially like maybe you're lacking information, maybe you need to try something new. And then all of a sudden, this stupid, I don't like the sentence, you find something, but it is a bit like that, because obviously everyone here, and Wouter included, is already a good player. And if there's a couple of tweaks and twists now here and there, and all of a sudden they're like, you feel like, oh yeah, this is how I can get into it. This is how I can follow through. Now I can really let my hands go and the ball just does what I want. And all of a sudden you have a top week.
Yeah, exactly. And then you need to make sure you maintain it or get better. So in how I see it with Wouter's game, I really think he can get to the European Tour. But as you know, the hardest thing is getting somewhere. And I think when you're there, I mean, if you're a reasonable, steady player, you should keep your card or even do better. But to get there is kind of tough. And he just needs to putt better and chip better. But he doesn't have many tournaments left. That's a bit of the problem.
If work is over with a player out of different reasons, how do you go about it? Like, do you spread the word that you're looking? Obviously, we have pretty big WhatsApp caddy network or different programs. But like, how do you go about it if you know, okay, it's going to be over after this week?
Well, in general, you just text another player, because you know most players. And you probably know that somebody's looking, or especially in the European Tour, it's just a caddy carousel. So every 2 or 3 weeks, you have like 5, 6 guys who sack each other, and then they look for new caddies again. So you might jump on board, and that's how it goes. And people sack each other in general just do text message.
Lovely, yeah.
And it's great. And sometimes they just, you have like 2 weeks off and they only text you after like 12 days.
Nice.
So 3 days before the tournament.
So it took the player 12 days to make up his mind. And you still have 2 days to find a new job.
To find a new job, and you're already paid for your costs and everything. Yeah, and it's nice. Basically bad luck. But caddies, they sometimes do the same to players. But that's something I wouldn't do. I would, you know, you need to be a little bit loyal and at least let the player know in advance that you might get another job. Not that he got stuck the next week without a caddy, that he doesn't have a caddy.
René, last question, then I leave you off the hook. Let's say someone is listening, coming out of Germany, young person, interested in a caddy job and trying to like really make a really good career in golf as a caddy. What would you think? What does he need to expect? How should he start? Is it even possible to get like a very good bag if you are not in the right circles in terms of, if you're not in management company circles that maybe you need to be, or like, how would you go about it?
Yeah, that's very tough to get you won't get a good bag, I think, if you're not in the right circles, in the right management circles. Then you just need to get lucky and start with a guy who's on a certain level and he's progressing of all of a sudden what we just said. Otherwise, it's nearly impossible. And I sometimes got the idea that some caddies paying managers as well, or maybe offer a percentage to get a certain job, which is not that strange, of course, because if somebody's offering me a top job, I'm happy to pay him something for it because he doesn't need to do it for free. But if you're if you're from Germany and want to start caddying, I would say you can just come out to the Challenge Tour and try to find someone. But I wouldn't come out without any caddy experience. So get yourself a good amateur first.
And main skills that you should bring?
You need to be able to bend all the way down so you can pick up grass, throw it up and see the wind is going.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, René, very much. That was a very interesting and funny talk. Always a pleasure to have you with us. I hope Wouter does well over the weekend. And then I hope to see you carrying a very lucrative bag over the next couple of years. Maybe, I don't know, back on live, maybe on any elite level tour. I wish you all the best and hope to see you very soon.
Yeah, that would be the best. And Bernd, if you ever want to make a comeback,
I thought about like major qualifying. And then if I should qualify out of whatever reason, without practicing, I might give you a call.
Yeah, and you have a good chance to do it without practicing. So yeah. No, just give me a call. It would be nice. And otherwise, 12 years from now, senior tour is waiting for you.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I already got the hair for it.
Exactly, yeah.
All right. René, thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Ben.
So, das war eine weitere Summer-Special-Folge mit René. Ich hoffe, ihr hattet Spaß. Bald sind wir wieder wöchentlich für euch da mit tagesaktuellen Themen. Bis dahin, tschüss.
Schreibt uns, liked uns. t-time.golf Tea Time, der Golf-Podcast. Auch auf Facebook und Instagram. Tea Time. Tea Time ist eine Produktion von Pod Ever. Infos und noch mehr spannende Podcasts gibt's auf podever.de.